Thank you. It gives him great pleasure, but not me, because I'm quite frightened, actually. I don't normally get nervous talking at meetings. I think it's the microphone that frightens me the most, and he's come to lower it down for me. Thank you. So I'm Rosie. I'm an addict. I'm quite nervous about doing this. I haven't spoken at a Unity Day before. For the last couple of years, my sponsor keeps saying to me, have you been asked to speak at a Unity Day yet, Rosie? Have you been asked to speak at a convention? If you get asked, would you say yes? And I said, well, I'd have to say yes. I wouldn't have a choice. Obviously, I've been asked to talk here today, but nobody really wants to follow Paul G, who is my sponsor. So I don't need a piece of paper to remember my own story, because obviously it is my own story, but when I first came into the rooms a few years ago, I was always terrified when I did a chair in my first year, in case I sort of froze and went blank, and I'd hate for this to be a silent 30 minutes for you. So I have got a piece of paper in front of me, and I'm going to look down at it. So just to sort of remind me so that I don't get, in case the fear comes over me and that I can't remember what it is, the message that I want to share with you today. So the theme is, I think it's spiritual journey or spiritual awakenings. And so where did that start for me? There was nothing spiritual about me when I arrived. I was that person in We Agnostics. I was anti-religious. I mocked people that were religious or that had a belief in God. I thought it was the way of weakness. I evaded God and avoided God. I had superstitions and traditions around God. I grew up in a household where it was impressed upon me as a child that if you don't do this, God might do that. So it was sort of deemed to be a punishment. My idea of God that was impressed upon me maybe at school in RE lessons was sort of a czar of the heavens, maybe the kind of the sort of religious God, and I could never sign up for that. So I spent the first 40 years of my life utterly unspiritual, with no belief in God at all. I utterly dismissed it. So We Agnostics is one of my favourite chapters. It changed everything for me. It sort of made everything explode for me. There's just something in there for everybody. It's so thought-provoking. It almost felt as if it had turned me upside down and it had shook me. And some of the statements that are in there that I had to really take a pause and step back and think about was, there's a bit in We Agnostics that says, could Rosie really think to herself that this world does... created in a cipher, it's coming from nowhere and it's going nowhere? And that was quite a strong and powerful statement for me. I had to really stop and ask myself that, because when I came here, and my mind still works like this, it's very mathematical and scientific. I'm the type of person that wants evidence and proof of something. There's another statement in there as well that it says, who am I to say that there's no God? So these are sort of statements that I needed to think about. There's a spiritual teacher that I listen to. I like to listen to lots of people, speakers and spiritual teachers. And one of them says, could you take over the universe and run it better? And I have to ask myself, could I create a flower? Can I create a tree? Can I make any of those things grow? And obviously the answer is clearly no. It talks about in the book about Columbus, which I think was about 500 years ago, that he discovered the world wasn't flat and that it was round. But at that time, that's what everybody believed. I can see my sponsor laughing at me there. So I ask myself now, we just know what we know now. We don't know what we're going to know in 100 years' time. I was listening to a chair, I think it was about a year ago, and he said, I have to remember that I'm just one small little pixel. I'm not the whole picture. And that's kind of, I suppose, how I see, you know, the universe and the world now, is that we no longer think that the world is flat, but how much of it do we really know about now? What does that look like in the future? So it talks in the book about how many of us have worshipped something or another, whether that's the God of reason or the God of logic, the enchanted night, you know, the dark sky and the stars And I was one of those that would look up in that in awe. But I would also be the person that, you know, would quite happily stay up till 3, 6 o'clock in the morning on cocaine arguing with you that there is no God. So there was tons and tons of things in We Agnostics that was very thought-provoking for me. And I guess that was the first time in my life where the scales fell from my eyes. There were two occasions. The first occasion when the scales fell from my eyes was when I first came in and somebody took me through the first four chapters of step one. And for the first time ever in my life, told me what was wrong with me. And that was an awakening for me, because I knew there was something wrong with me, but I didn't know what was wrong with me. And then, you know, my second awakening, the second opportunity from the scales to fall from my eyes was We Agnostics, because I'd lived my whole life anti-religious, anti-God, not a spiritual bone in my body. And that chapter opened those doors for me and gave me the opportunity to consider, actually, maybe, you know, there is something that I could potentially possibly believe in. So it gives me the opportunity to have my own concept. And if I had arrived here and somebody said to me, it's this way or the highway, and you've got to have this concept, I genuinely don't think I would still be here. But because I was allowed to create my own concept, that was of interest to me. So the book talks about the steel girder. So I'm a mathematical and scientific mind. In the book it says about a steel girder. And visual proof is not the strongest proof. So this looks like it's solid to me. But actually, and I haven't got the intelligence to understand all the physics and the science of it, but I know that it's millions of atoms and electrons whirring around that make it look like a solid item. But it's enough. I understand that enough to understand that visual proof isn't maybe the strongest proof. And that in the book it talks about vast laws of physics underline the totality of this universe. It talks about a creative intelligence, the realm of the spirit, and these things sounded attractive and interesting to me. I have a curious mind. It talked to me about the faith of reason. So I came here thinking I haven't got a faith, but I reasoned everything out and rationalised everything out. I looked for evidence in everything. And so by going through We Agnostics, I came to understand that actually all along I did have some sort of a faith. Maybe it was a faith of logic and a faith of reason. Some sort of a blind faith. So I have a blind faith that if I go and switch the light switch, electricity is going to come out. And when I leave here tonight, I'm going to get into my car and my car's going to start. And I've got a blind faith that when I go to bed tonight, I'm probably going to wake up in the morning breathing. So all along, I did have some sort of a faith that maybe I wasn't aware of when I first came along. And there's a story in the book about the Wright brothers, who the mathematicians of that time said, don't bother, you can't make, you know, man's not going to fly. That's reserved for the birds. But the Wright brothers persevered for 30 years because obviously they had a faith deep inside of them and they continued. And obviously, you know, history tells us that they succeeded. So We Agnostics was able to sort of introduce me to a concept of my own, and I was able to relate to Mother Nature and Mother Earth, that the vast laws underlying the totality of everything. And that's really, I suppose, where my spiritual journey and my concept of my higher power was able to develop. So I believe that we all come from the same source and we're all going to return to the same source, and that we're all kind of one body, really, all related to one another. I believe what the scientists say about the ingredients that's made up in my body is exactly the same as the stars, and that everything is related to one another. I believe that I'm a vibrational energy, and probably that I'm a spiritual being having a human experience. So if therefore we're all connected, then that sort of links back to what the book says about God is everything or nothing. It means it's God is everywhere. It's in me and through me and in everything that I touch. So I have different methods of connecting with God. Obviously, part of that basic connection comes from... What time did I start? Has anyone got... 10 minutes, 20 minutes. Okay, thank you. So prayer and meditation is part of that, and that helps me build my relationship with God. And that turning over to God, that trust and faith is, for me, you know, the steps and my step free isn't like a course of antibiotics that I took and it's happened for me now. It's a daily challenge and a daily relationship with God for me. So there might be some stuff that I turn over to God, but then there'll be other things that I'm trying to battle for control and cajoling and compromising on with God. And some things that I'll let go of and some things that I'm still trying to control. My relationship with God over the years is improved, obviously, and my conscious contact with God has improved, but really mainly through painful times. I don't generally grow through when everything is going well. Something that I heard recently, it says there's three birds sitting on a branch and one of them decides to fly away. How many birds are still on the branch? And of course there's still only three, because making a decision to turn my life over to God is just a decision on its own. I need to follow through a commitment throughout that during the course of the day and not just go about on my will. There's another story as well. I can't even remember where I heard it, but it's the story of a tightrope walker at the circus. If we all went to the circus now and we saw a tightrope walker, we'd probably, you know, wouldn't really bat an eyelid because we think he's a professional tightrope walker and he's just going to walk across there and that's not a problem. But if he then had a wheelbarrow with him and one of us was asked to get into that wheelbarrow, for me, that's the difference between a trust and a faith. So I can very easily say, I've got a faith in God. And I hear people say all the time, I've got a strong faith in God. I know he's got my back. But actually, do I trust him? Am I really letting go? Am I really turning everything over? And that's like my daily battle and challenge, my growth. And it's not something I think I'm going to achieve next week. I think it's a lifelong journey for me. My sponsor once said to me, I think a couple of years ago, that man cannot live by bread and water alone. And if I'm a spiritual being, then I need to nurture my spirit and I need to feed my spirit. And how do I do that? Well, I do that through nurturing and growing my relationship with God through spiritual tools and spiritual practices. You know, there's the whole of More About Alcoholism talks to us, Paul touched on one of them, about people that put down a drink or a drug and don't pick up a spiritual way of life. And that's a painful way of existing. I don't want that for myself. So I haven't just come in and done the steps, but I continually do them on a regular basis, but continually look for ways to grow and to learn. I'm always looking for teachers and to learn from others that have gone before me. I went to a Unity Day in, I think it was Kings upon Thames a year or two ago, and they had a Buddhist monk come and talk to us for an hour. And the simple underlying story that he had was, we constantly, it's a bit like what happened in Bill's story, we're running after status and prestige and money and jobs and materialism and worldly clamours. If that stuff really made us happy, then why aren't we happy? So I have to look internally. One of the other things that I've been thinking about a lot in the last year is, if I died right now, this minute, my body would just be here on the floor. But so then, therefore, what am I? I'm not my body. I'm not my home. I'm not my car. I'm not my money. What would be gone of me? It would be my spirit, wouldn't it? If my body was still in the room, then what am I? And that's kind of a proposition and something that I sit with and reflect on and contemplate. That what is it that's actually then left? It's my essence, my spiritual essence, but that's what I believe. And another spiritual teacher that I listen to, and I sign up to this, is unfortunately, and it might happen for children these days, and maybe it happened for some of you, but it certainly didn't me, and we don't raise our children with spiritual maybe practices and principles. What we tell them is that you've got to get the qualifications and you've got to be the best and you've got to beat the next person, you've got to get this and you've got to get that. But actually what we don't teach them is self-love. And so, you know, I came here at 40 and I don't know how to love myself. I remember being about 18 months and going to a meeting. There was obviously something going on for me at the time. I think Stacey was there actually. She might have been at that meeting. bawling my eyes out, and I can't remember what was going on for me, but somebody talked about loving self, and I kind of needed practical steps, and I remember saying to the women in the room, but how do you do that? And I remember going home that night and ringing some women and next day and asking, like, how do you do it? What does loving yourself mean on, you know, on this spiritual journey? And some people said to me, have an early night, paint your nails, wash your hair. And I thought, no, that's not it. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that wasn't right. And that just sort of demonstrates that we come here, most of us, I certainly didn't, I don't know how to love myself. I don't know what spiritual principles are, how to nurture myself. If I can't nurture and love myself, how on earth am I going to have those sorts of relationships with other people? So some of those spiritual principles that I try to develop and manifest and maintain and share with others in, you know, at home, in the family, in the workplace, in the fellowship is empathy and compassion. And the book talks about kindness and love, patience and tolerance. And I certainly didn't know how to do any of those things when I came here. There's another spiritual teacher that I listened to, and a couple of years ago I heard her say, we beat ourselves up, we don't build ourselves up. And they say that we have about 60,000 thoughts a day, and about 90% of them are exactly the same as what I had yesterday. So if they're negative thoughts, I'm just perpetuating this negativity, aren't I? So I've got to, you know, if I want to be well and I want to have some sort of peace and serenity in my life, that I need to change the way that I think, because I believe the quality of my life is the quality of my thoughts. So I try to work on that quite a lot, to build myself up, not beat myself up with negativity and self-criticism, which we all know we're very good at doing. And that, you know, for me, that is obviously quite a long way past putting down a drink and a drug, because once we've done that, what I'm doing and what we're doing is emotional sobriety, because I couldn't navigate the world without a drink and a drug. I couldn't cope with feelings. I couldn't cope with vulnerability. I couldn't cope with pain. I couldn't cope with rejection or fear, so I took a drink and a drug. But now I need to live life without a drink and a drug, so I need to learn those things. I need to learn emotional sobriety and emotional maturity and how to navigate the world through without a drink and a drug. There's one thing that I've heard recently that I remind myself is that I can go to the ocean with a thimble, or I can go with my arms stretched wide. So why would I want to come here and just do the steps once, or just pray for 5 minutes in the morning and then run out my door and forget about it? You know, if I want to be well and I want to live a peaceful life, then why wouldn't I do as much of this as I possibly can to be as happy and as peaceful as I possibly can? And some of the tools that I use to do that are obviously prayer and meditation, as well as my step 3 and 7 prayer and my personal prayers. I have some prayers that I use every day from 9 and 10 and 11, and I'm going to try and remember it now. Obviously, it just comes off pat when I do it on a day-to-day basis at home. But one of the last things that step 9 asks us to do is to be kind and loving. So I say to God every morning, help me to be kind and loving and patient and tolerant with everyone, including myself, not just other people, but be kind and loving to myself, Rosie. And then in 10, I ask God to help me to be growing effectiveness and understanding. And what does effectiveness and understanding mean? And so, you know, effectiveness and understanding for me is a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about, is that being awake, waking up and staying awake and helping others to do that as well, and checking myself and looking at how I'm thinking and feeling and conducting myself. Asking God to show me what his vision is for today and to give me the power to carry that out, and asking him to take away my will to the exact degree that it's no use to him or my fellows. So it's not about me not having a will, but the proper use of the will. And then, you know, for 11, I'm asking God to divorce me from dishonesty, selfishness, and self-seeking. I ask him for inspirational, intuitive thought. I ask him to help me to live in his values and his principles with God consciousness. I ask him to help me to relax, take it easy, not to struggle, and for me to remember throughout my day that for his will to be done, not mine. I ask him to direct my thinking, and to help me think about my 24 hours ahead. And I ask him to helped me to pause. Not just before agitation, but just pause throughout the day, Rosie, and just keep your mouth shut and think about what you're saying before you say it, before you act. And just because I'm telling you that these are all the things that I try to do, it doesn't mean that I get them right, because obviously I don't. You know, I do make mistakes. And in meditation, you know, we hear lots of people say, take that into meditation, but actually I prefer not to. I like my meditation to be still and quiet when I can connect with myself and God. But there is an example that I can use. There's sometimes I will meditate on a particular thing. So recently I had an experience in the last couple of months where I had fear around something. So every day for a couple of weeks I use the resentment prayer. Some people know it's the sick man prayer. I didn't have resentment towards this person, but I was fearful around it. And so my fear around that situation softened every day that I continued to use that prayer. But I also used a metta meditation, which is a kind and loving meditation. So I would sit every morning and meditate for that individual, for them to be happy, for them to be peaceful, for them to be well, for them to be happy and peaceful and well, basically. And by the time that 2 weeks was over, I didn't feel that fear against that person, because I recognised that actually they're an unwell person. There's also gratitude is really important. I can be the first person to feel sorry for myself. There's 7 forms of self in the book. I think it's on page 62, 1 or 2. But 2 of those top forms of self is probably the most predominant ones for me, which is self-pity and self-seeking. So when that happens to me, I need to increase my gratitude. I might write a gratitude list from time to time. And try to, you know, every day in my prayers, I do thank God that he woke me up today to another precious day of life. And I thank him for the roof over my head and the food on the table and the job that I have and the people that are around me. It's important for me to remain grateful. When I first came in, I would meditate at home in my lounge, and there's a clock in the kitchen. And when I get really, really quiet, I can just really gently hear it tick-tocking really gently in the background. And I came here really unreliable, and I thought to myself that gentle ticking clock was a bit like God. I might not always be able to hear him, but I know he's always there, and I wanted to become more like that, more reliable. There's lots of other things that I do for my spiritual practice, and that might be, you know, candles, incense, visualization, Paul mentioned it, journaling. It might be affirmations. I do that on a daily basis. Yoga, walking barefoot in the park, or just sitting watching nature. I might sit in the park and just watch the cloud formation passing by, which allows me to just still my spirit and quiet myself, connect with myself and connect with God. So there's a story that I heard recently, which was about an orange. So if you squeeze an orange, what comes out? So orange juice comes out. Why does orange juice come out of an orange? Because that's what's inside. So if I get pushed into a corner and I get squeezed, or I'm in a rock and a hard place, or I get disturbed or uncomfortable, what comes out of me? If what comes out of me is anger and fear and resentment and jealousy and bitterness, that's because that's what's inside of me. And so I see my spiritual journey as, you know, my journey with God and these tools and the steps is to detox all of that crap out of me, so that I can have, you know, patience, tolerance, love and kindness inside of me. One of the things that I need to remind myself is about, do I want to be kind or do I want to be right? And I have to remind myself is that everything is exactly as it should be, and everyone's doing the best they can from their state of consciousness. Thanks, Mikey, I've got 5 minutes. One of the things that I'd just like to touch on really is about vulnerability. There's somebody that I've been listening to recently, and she's saying, because we talk about being brave and courageous, and she says, actually, you can't be brave and courageous if you're not being vulnerable, because otherwise you're just wearing a mask. So part of my journey is about learning to live with vulnerability, because pain's going to happen, difficult stuff's going to happen, and I haven't got a drink and a drug. So I don't like feeling that pain or difficulty, but if I can learn to make it my friend, then it's okay when it comes along. That's going to help me navigate through life without a drink and a drug. So I want to sort of empty myself as a vessel and ask God to talk through me and to help me hear him talk through others. I've just got a couple of more things that I want to share with you. So it was about a year or 18 months ago, somebody told me something that I didn't want to hear, but they told it to me with kindness. And it was almost so palpable that it, like, as if they put it in a little box and they wrapped it up in a bow and they sort of just handed it to me really, really gently like that. And up until then, I'd done a lot of work around the St. Francis prayer that talks about joy and light and love and everything. And I'd go through my whole day trying to remember balancing all of these things, trying to be all of them things. And when that thing happened and they almost gave me kindness like this, it was almost like it went inside of me and I didn't have to make that effort anymore. It was like the kindness was inside of me. And so I don't have to try and remember all of those principles every day, all the time. If I can just try and be kind to people, if I can put my head on the pillow at night knowing that I've been the kindest that I can, that helps me to try to live all of these principles in all of my affairs. And I'm just going to wrap up with this. So my purpose in life, I feel that I now have a purpose. I was desperate to have a purpose before I came to recovery. And I feel that my purpose now is to have a spiritual awakening of my own and to help others through theirs by sharing my experience. And I had a sponsee about a year ago, and she said, I don't want that to be my purpose. I want more for my life. But I don't think we should mix up the difference between purpose and dreams. I don't know what more could be what I would want for my life than a purpose to be able to help other people in the way that we help each other. But that doesn't mean that we can't have dreams. And I think those two things are very separate. You know, carrying God's message of love and kindness, not just the big book and the steps, but because I believe the steps is a beginning. It's not the end. It's not a course of antibiotics I took a few years ago or last year. It's, for me, it's the beginning of my journey. And I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much to Michael and John for asking me.